Imagine a developer builds a massive, sprawling luxury apartment complex, like just a huge undertaking. And they construct it under the strict assumption that absolutely everyone in the city wants to rent forever.
Right. Like nobody wants to own a home anymore.
Exactly. And they base their entire financial model on that assumption. The construction loans, the maintenance staff, I mean, all of it relies on 100% occupancy of renters.
And let me guess, the market hasn't fundamentally changed.
Yeah, shocker, right? A lot of people still prefer to own. So they open the doors, faced with a half-empty building and mounting debts, and management decides their only solution is to, well, hike the rent on the remaining tenants by 60%.
Wow. I mean, you don't need an MBA to know that math collapses.
You really don't. And yesterday, we watched that exact collapse happen in real time. Today is July 7th, 2026, exactly one day after an absolute earthquake in the gaming world. Yesterday, Microsoft announced the elimination of 3,200 jobs at Xbox.
Yeah, that is a 20% cut to their entire workforce in a single day.
Just wiped out.
The scale of it is difficult to process, even for an industry that has seen its fair share of contractions. I mean, the ripples from this specific decision are going to alter how video games are funded, developed, and distributed for the next decade.
Which is exactly why, for this deep dive, we are pulling from a massive stack of sources to understand the underlying mechanics of this failure. We've got the internal layoff memo from Xbox's new CEO, Asha Sharma.
We also have leaked financial documents obtained by the Wall Street Journal, some pretty raw reactions from the developers affected on Twitter.
And an extensive industry autopsy from the Tech and Gaming Analysis team. Our mission here is to figure out how Microsoft went from spending tens of billions of dollars acquiring the biggest studios on the planet to just dismantling them.
And ultimately, what this means for you and the future of the games you play.
Okay, let's unpack this. I want to start with the baseline numbers because you really can't understand the sheer panic driving these layoffs without looking at the forecast Microsoft missed.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal leak is particularly illuminating here. I mean, everything hinges on Game Pass. Microsoft's internal projections dictated that Game Pass needed to hit 77 million subscribers by the end of 2026.
77 million.
Right, just to make their studio acquisitions financially viable. They literally built the infrastructure for 77 million people.
And according to those same leaks, they're sitting at roughly 30 million. They missed their own target by 47 million users.
It's a staggering miss.
I am trying to wrap my head around a forecasting error of that magnitude. Like, it implies a total misread of consumer behavior. But what really baffles me is the hardware response.
Oh, the console pricing.
Yeah. I'm looking at the Tekken report, and hardware revenue is down 33% year over year. Meanwhile, the Xbox Series X, which launched at $499, is currently sitting on shelves with an $800 price tag. That is a 60% hike.
It's just wild to look at those numbers on paper.
Well, if your restaurant is empty, you don't raise the price of the burger by 60% to make up for it. Why did they think an $800 console would work when a more powerful PS5 Pro is sitting right there for $700?
Well, what's fascinating here is that it's not supply chain issues, right? It's the collapse of their subsidy model. Historically, the video game console business operates on a razor and blades model.
Right, you sell the razor cheap and make money on the blade.
Exactly. You sell the hardware at a loss or, you know, a very thin margin to get the box into the consumer's living room. You then make your actual profit by taking a 30% cut of every $70 game they buy for that box.
So the hardware loss is heavily subsidized by the software sales.
Precisely. But Game Pass structurally undermined that back-end software revenue. When you train your audience to pay a flat subscription fee instead of buying games a la carte, that crucial subsidy just evaporates.
Wow, so they couldn't afford the hit anymore.
Yeah, Microsoft simply could no longer afford to take a $200 hit on every piece of plastic they manufactured. They had to pass the true manufacturing cost directly to the consumer.
Which exposes a massive contradiction in their strategy, doesn't it? I mean, previous leadership spent years telling us Xbox wasn't a box anymore, it was an ecosystem. You could play on your phone, your PC, your smart TV.
Right. They explicitly tried to make the console hardware irrelevant to the broader business.
They wanted to transcend the hardware entirely.
But when they fell 47 million subscribers short, the ecosystem revenue wasn't enough to cover the massive burn rate of their studios. So they suddenly needed the hardware division to be profitable on its own merits.
Which forced that massive $800 price hike.
Exactly. They tried to be an agnostic software ecosystem and a premium hardware manufacturer simultaneously, and the friction between those two goals burned both of them down.
And man, that friction is costing real people their livelihoods. A 47 million subscriber gap isn't an abstract concept, you know? It is being paid for by the developers who actually build these digital worlds.
Yeah, let's look at the studio level, starting with id Software. The sources indicate their staff was just slashed by 50%.
Over 90 people gone.
Yeah.
And the timing, I mean, the timing of the id Software cuts is incredibly harsh.
Yeah, it really is.
They literally just launched the Doom the Dark Ages Revelations DLC today, July 7th.
Dude,
to celebrate ship day by watching half their team pack their desks.
It's heartbreaking. John Romero actually tweeted about this, pointing out the loss of institutional knowledge.
Right. The co-founder of Doom.
Yeah, he noted that gutting the team behind the id Tech engine by 50% doesn't just delay the next game. It fractures decades of proprietary engineering expertise.
Exactly. The loss of institutional memory is the unseen cost of these cuts. And we see a similar, though perhaps even more frustrating, dynamic playing out at Obsidian Entertainment.
Oh, absolutely. They took a 25% headcount reduction. Yeah. That is 60 to 70 highly specialized developers.
I am genuinely struggling to understand the metric for success here. Obsidian basically carried the Xbox first-party lineup last year. They dropped three massive titles in 2025, Avowed, The Outer Worlds 2, and Grounded 2.
Which is an absurd output for a single studio in a 12-month window.
Right.
AAA game development is incredibly taxing, and pushing out three titles of that scale requires a massive burn rate of both capital and human energy.
Well, Obsidian's design director, Josh Sawyer, explicitly called that release schedule the result of poor planning and resource mismanagement.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No. It feels like management set an impossible, overlapping production mandate, the studio somehow miraculously delivered on it, and the reward for keeping the platform afloat was getting a quarter of their staff fired.
It points to a leadership structure that is managing a spreadsheet, not a creative pipeline. And that disconnect becomes even more apparent when you look at the studios Microsoft decided to divest entirely.
Like Ninja Theory.
Yeah, fresh off releasing Hellblade II, they were sold to an unknown buyer, and Double Fine and Compulsion Games were spun back out into independent studios.
Spun out with zero budget and no publishing safety net. Which brings me to Undead Labs, because this one genuinely feels like smoke and mirrors to me.
The State of Decay 3 situation.
Yes. Microsoft sold Undead Labs, but just 1 month ago at the Summer Showcase, Microsoft paraded State of Decay 3 on stage, with a 2027 release window and a massive day one on Game Pass logo.
But according to the reporting, the sale contract for Undead Labs contains zero Xbox controlling terms.
Meaning the new parent company is under no legal obligation to put State of Decay 3 on Game Pass or even release it on Xbox exclusively. They are marketing games to drive subscriptions using assets they are actively liquidating.
It's incredibly deceptive. And then you have a studio like Arcane Lyon in France. Because of strict French labor laws, Microsoft can't just send out an email and terminate the staff. They are legally forced into a mandatory consultation period.
Oh man, stuck in bureaucratic purgatory.
Exactly. And that consultation period is arguably worse for the studio's long-term health than a clean break. Marvel's Blade is now in a state of suspended animation. Development freezes, the most talented engineers and artists quietly start accepting offers from competitors.
So the studio just hollows out from the inside before the lawyers even finish negotiating the closure. It's a slow death.
Yeah, it really is.
And we'd be remiss not to mention Kevin LaChapelle, the architect of their backwards compatibility program, let go after 37 years. I mean, his public statement was surprisingly graceful, saying he still believes all entertainment will eventually be streamed, but
it's still a massive blow.
A huge blow. If I step back and look at this entire roster, Obsidian, Ninja Theory, Arcane Microsoft spent $76.2 billion on ZeniMax and Activision to acquire these exact teams. It feels like buying a fleet of Ferraris and then selling the engines to pay for gas.
That's a great way to put it.
Why spend the GDP of a small country to buy the best engine builders and world designers, only to dismantle them? It heavily implies the core distribution mechanism they are feeding, which is Game Pass, is fundamentally flawed.
Well, the tech and analysis breaks down the failure of Game Pass into three structural flaws. The first is pure cannibalization.
Okay, break that down for me.
So when Microsoft committed to launching every massive first-party game day one on the subscription, they fundamentally altered consumer psychology. They trained their most loyal audience that buying games is a financial mistake.
We actually saw this play out with Starfield, right? Physical and traditional digital sales in the UK completely collapsed because everyone realized they could just pay $10 to play at a launch.
Exactly.
But I mean, from a business perspective, if they get you into this subscription, doesn't that recurring revenue eventually balance out the lost $70 sale?
It would if consumers treated Game Pass like a utility bill, like something you set on auto pay and forget about. But gamers are highly engaged consumers.
They pay attention to what they're spending money on.
Right. Tekken's report highlights a massive churn rate problem. Players would wait for two or three major games to hit the service, subscribe for 1 month, binge the campaigns, and immediately cancel.
So Microsoft sacrificed massive, predictable launch window sales for a highly volatile, transient subscriber base that just spikes and drops entirely based on the release calendar.
Exactly. They effectively destroyed their own primary revenue stream and replaced it with a leaky bucket.
Unbelievable. Okay, so what is the second structural flaw?
The multi-platform backfire. When the subscription growth stalled, Microsoft needed to find new revenue, obviously, so they started porting their exclusive games, Hi-Fi Rush, Pentiment, Sea of Thieves, and eventually Indiana Jones, to the PlayStation 5 and PC via Steam.
I see the logic from a pure software sales perspective. You want to sell more copies. But if you look at the wider ecosystem, it's totally self-defeating. Well, if I'm a consumer deciding where to spend my money, and I know the biggest Xbox exclusives are guaranteed to hit the PS5 sitting under my TV 6 months later, you have just given me an $800 reason not to buy your console.
That's spot on.
They actively incentivize their own audience to leave the hardware ecosystem.
Which brings us to the third and probably most critical flaw. The subscription model itself may simply be incompatible with how AAA video games are consumed. Microsoft looked at the success of Netflix and assumed the model could be mapped one-to-one onto gaming.
But the math of consumption is entirely different, isn't it? Walk me through the mechanics of that difference, because on the surface, paying a flat fee for a library of content sounds identical to Netflix.
Right, but it's about the ratio of production costs to consumer time. A Netflix movie might cost $200 million to make, but a viewer consumes it in 2 hours. They might watch three movies in a single weekend.
So they feel they are getting continuous value from the subscription.
Exactly. Now, a AAA video game also costs $200 million to make. But a player might spend 50 to 100 hours in that single game. It can literally take months for a working adult to finish one major RPG.
Okay, so the value proposition shifts entirely.
Yes. Industry data shows that a large segment of hardcore console players only purchase and play two or three major blockbuster titles a year.
Wow, really? Just two or three?
Yeah. So if those three games cost $70 each, the consumer spends $210 annually. Why would that consumer commit to paying $120 to $180 every single year, in perpetuity, for a massive library of hundreds of games they physically do not have the time to play?
Oh man, here's where it gets really interesting. They basically created this incredibly lavish all-you-can-eat buffet, right? Mm-hmm. When the customers come in, they only want to eat the highly expensive $200 million steak, and then they leave because they're full for the next 3 months.
That is a perfect analogy.
And then Microsoft got mad that no one was buying the steak a la carte anymore. It makes no economic sense for the player to stay subscribed year-round, and it makes absolutely no economic sense for the publisher to fund a half-decade of development on the promise of a fraction of a $10 monthly fee.
And we know this math is a known quantity in the industry because Sony looked at the exact same variables and chose a very different path.
Right, with PS Plus.
Yeah, Sony kept PlayStation Plus Premium as a complement, a supplemental archive, not a primary distribution method. They explicitly refused to put massive $200 million single-player games on the service on day one.
So they maintain those traditional, highly profitable software sales while still capturing subscription revenue from older titles?
Exactly. They didn't cannibalize themselves.
Okay, so the hardware is priced out of reality. The subscription model is cannibalizing sales without retaining users, and the studios are being gutted to balance the books. How does leadership defend this to their investors right now?
Well, let's look at Asha Sharma's new stated goal in the layoff memo.
Yeah, because there is a claim in here that seems completely detached from the reality we just laid out.
In the exact same internal communication where she authorized the firing of 3,200 people, Sharma stated a new vision for the brand. She wrote that Xbox aims to entertain more than a billion people each day.
A billion. Daily. I honestly thought that was a typo when I first read it.
Oh, it's hard to believe, yeah.
Let's run a reality check on that metric for a second. The Tekken analysis estimates Xbox's total active user base, and this is generously combining console, PC, mobile, and cloud, at roughly 500 million monthly active users.
Monthly, yes, not daily.
Right. To get to a billion daily, you have to look at the entire global gaming population. Steam is the undisputed juggernaut of PC distribution. Their all-time record for concurrent users is 42.6 million.
It's not even close.
Even if we pad Microsoft's numbers with their massive mobile acquisitions, like Minecraft has roughly 140 million monthly users. Candy Crush pulls in around 26 million daily.
Yeah, the math just isn't there.
You could aggregate Call of Duty, Candy Crush, Minecraft, and literally every single person who logs into an Xbox console, and you wouldn't even cross the half billion mark daily. The math is completely impossible. So why would a CEO put a target that absurd in writing?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to realize who the audience for that memo actually is. Asha Sharma is not talking to you, the gamer, and she certainly isn't writing to the developer she just laid off. She is messaging Wall Street.
Ah, so she's lying to investors.
She is attempting a massive narrative repositioning. As long as Xbox is viewed as a console manufacturer, they are losing to PlayStation and Nintendo. So she is actively trying to rebrand Xbox as a boundless, digital-first tech ecosystem that operates on a global billion-user scale.
Trying to sound like Meta or Google.
Exactly. The problem, as Taken points out, is that changing the narrative for shareholders does not fix the structural rot on the ground. You cannot spin away a dying hardware base and decimated creative studios.
No, you really can't. Which leaves us with the ultimate question for you, the listener, tuning into this right now. If you are invested in this ecosystem, what does the future of the games you play actually look like?
Tekken outlined a realistic scenario for the next 3 to 5 years, and it requires a significant recalibration of expectations. Xbox is basically transitioning into a hybrid secondary market player.
So, not a market leader anymore.
No. We know a next-generation console is in development, codenamed Project Helix, but analysts expect it to be a highly priced, niche, premium device targeted solely at legacy loyalists, and it will almost certainly be entirely diskless.
Yeah, I noticed a line in the report about a disk-to-digital program, meaning if you have a massive physical library from the Xbox One or Series X era, you'll have to use some sort of external verification system just to get digital licenses for the games you already own.
It's pure damage control as they exit the physical media market entirely. That's going to be a huge point of friction.
Massive friction. So what happens to Game Pass?
Game Pass will remain, but growth will stagnate. The most profound shift is that Microsoft will effectively operate as a massive third-party publisher. You will see the vast majority of their output launching simultaneously on PlayStation and Steam.
Man, it is the Sega pivot all over again.
Yeah, it really is.
In the early 2000s, Sega lost the hardware war with the Dreamcast, bowed out of making consoles, and just started putting Sonic games on Nintendo and PlayStation hardware. Microsoft is executing the exact same maneuver, just layered under billions of dollars of corporate tech speak.
The parallel is very strong. They are essentially a software company returning to their roots.
We've spent this entire deep dive dissecting Microsoft's internal math, the subscription mechanisms, and the Wall Street spin. But I want to wrap up with a lingering thought for you to explore on your own.
Yeah, zooming out from just the business side of things.
Exactly. Think about the developers at IG Software or ZeniMax who were just let go yesterday. When a 37-year veteran or a studio that literally invented the first-person shooter gets gutted, we aren't just losing a couple of games.
No, it's much bigger than that.
We are losing the institutional memory of how digital worlds are built. If the foundational architects of our industry are treated as disposable line items on a subscription spreadsheet, what does the art form of gaming look like 10 years from now?